God be in our minds and think through them. God be on our lips and speak through them. God be in our hearts and fill them with so much love and grace that that love and grace flows forth from us like a light shining in the dark, touching the hearts of all those whom we meet. In the name of that very same Jesus we pray, amen and amen. I want to begin this morning with the thoughts for the week. But before I do that, every once in a while, I have solicited questions from the congregation that are on their minds, and I would ask them to write them down, sign them. However, I don't like to get unsigned things like that. About a question that you might have in the Christian faith that you would like me to address, or some particular text that you would like me to address. And periodically in the past, I've done that, and we've had a question-answer sermon here. We've picked the questions out, and I will respond to your questions. So if you want to do that, we can start collecting them at any time. You can send them to me on my email. You can leave them in the office. You can call me on the phone, whatever you want to do with them. And we will select a few, and we'll do that periodically, once in a while, to get to the questions that are on your minds. Not only the questions that are on mine. And so we want to do that. Now, to the thoughts for the week. These are three thoughts that are kind of in line with what I was wanted to talk about this morning, namely faith and belief. And the first one is from John Meacham. And every time I read these, I see John Meacham on TV. He looks pretty old, but he was born in 1969, and so I feel like I'm ancient. But he's a rather thoughtful fellow who is a graduate professor for the history of the presidency at Vanderbilt University in Nashville. And he's written a number of books that he's a presidential biographer. And he writes here, and this is something to which I subscribe, and I think that the Reformed tradition in theology subscribes very, very clearly. Religious belief, like history itself, is a story that is always unfolding, always subject to inquiry and ripe for questioning. For without doubt, there is no faith. So in other words, our faith is something that encounters every culture and every time, and it's never the same at the same. The proposition, the principle is the same, but that principle interacts all the time with the culture around it. And so it has different tensions here and there. And you don't have to say everything all at once all the time. I loaned a book out that I have. I mentioned Karen Armstrong once before. In a sermon here. And Karen Armstrong is a historian of religious faith, and she makes the very, very same point that religion, although she reverses the terms as I use them, but we can interchange them. And she talks about the very same thing, that the faith is alive and well and dynamic because it does, in fact, interact with what's happening at the very time that we are living. And we can see that history is a past accounting of those same interactions. The problem is that we don't always learn from those previous interactions, and we have a tendency to repeat them again and again. But that's from John Meacham. And then the second reading is from my favorite author of all time, Anonymous. Very prolific. There are probably more things written by Anonymous than anybody else I know. But this is a very powerful one, I think. And it's very, very good advice, although it's very difficult to follow. If we think differently from a person, we in time come to understand him or her if we remain in fellowship with them and if we talk things over with them. If, however, we shut ourselves off from them and form our own little group, there will never be any hope or moment of understanding. I think that's a very powerful insight. Several years ago up here, I gave a sermon which I titled The Closet Society. Maybe you might remember it, but probably not. It's been a long time ago. And in that closet society, what I did was, a man was sitting in a room all by himself, and there was a closet door over there, but he couldn't open it. And as the day went on, people would come in, and they would ask him, what's going on in here? He said, well, I'm just resting here. And, well, what's that over there? He said, well, I don't know. I can't get it open. And he went over, and he tried it. He couldn't get it open. And he came back to the table and started talking to the man at the table. And this goes on for quite some time. And before they get finished, they had decided that it was a closet. And they had a guarantor of the closet. And they had rules for the closet. And they had all kinds of structure. Now, what does that sound like? That sounds like politicians. It sounds like politicians in the church. You know, we build up all of our requirements. Follow all their requirements, you can't get in. You can't get that door open. And you come together and you worship the closet, even though you don't know what's in there. It was a very interesting sermon, if I do say so myself. It must have been a good week that week. And then the last one is a quotation from Ted Roosevelt. It's an interesting guy. Because he has a lot of quotable things, some of them good, some of them not so good, but he is quite quotable. I like this one, and it's a nice play on words, I think. And you can read it right there. Nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. Nobody cares how much you know. You know, you can have all kinds of education and degrees and whatever, and nobody really gives a hoot unless they can also see that you are a caring person, and so on. Karl Barth, he had 35 honorary doctorate degrees, 35. He was getting them all over the place, but he had a long life to collect them. And he didn't have a doctorate, so when he got them, he was thrilled to death. And then he kept getting one on the other and the other, and he became the greatest theologian in the Western part of the world in the Christian faith. But he was a person of great knowledge and great caring and stood up for principles. He was one of those who stood up to Adolf Hitler in the 1930s and so on. So keep these in mind. Nobody cares how much you know, although it is helpful to know something, until they know how much you care. So in other words, it doesn't really matter what you say so much as it matters what you do. What you do really shows what you really believe. Now this morning, we saw kind of some strange readings in the texts. About it. And through the gospel writer, we have this manager finding a way to get back. And what we really see in this whole process is the generosity or the grace or the forgiveness of the owner of all that property when he said, well, this fellow was really quite shrewd, and so we'll give him the benefit of the doubt, although that he turned around and was not so generous with those there. But I've always wrestled with this problem of faith and belief. You know, during my career in school, I was focusing on a principle that was very much a part of my whole life's work. It comes from St. Anselm of Canterbury, although he was an Italian monk who became a French cardinal and ended up being, Archbishop of Canterbury, Saint Anselm of Canterbury. And the principle that he has is this. In the Latin it goes, fides quarens intellectum, or another version of it is credo ut intelligam. And what that means is faith seeking understanding. So faith is not some kind of dormant thing that just sits there, but faith is something that examines life that's all around you. Fides quarens. Faith asking questions about what's happening in the world around you. And how does that principle of love and grace that we see in Jesus of Nazareth, how does that really find its way into light. And the other one, credo, ut intelligam, I believe. I believe in Jesus because that belief helps me understand and move forward. And all during my life, I've wrestled with that, you know, and asking questions about belief. You know, the word belief itself is an old Middle English word. Like so many words, it was conflated from two words, being, be, and living. Belief. They coordinated them and created this new word. We were always creating new words, like goodbye is God be with you. But we don't really think about that, do we? We just say goodbye when we hang up the phone. We do it, and we do it all very cavalierly, don't we? Goodbye, oh yes. But it really is God be with you. So these things really have to be unpacked sometimes. And then the thought always comes across my mind, why is it so difficult to believe? And it is difficult to believe. I've spent my whole life trying to figure this out. Why is it difficult? Well, it's difficult, I think, because we really know too much. You know, we're not like kids. One of the beautiful things about children is, you know, you can tell them something and they believe it and they suck it all up and they let it fill their bodies and their minds, you know, and they have great imagination. But all of us, you know, we've grown up a little bit. And we know that things are not always the way we say they are. You know, we can look on our newscasts almost every day, any week these days. And we can see how evil and how difficult and how hateful and how mean the world can really be. And so we don't want to put ourselves out on the line. We don't want to take that chance. Why should we? And we go off in a different direction. And sometimes we even are part of that creation ourselves. We keep others out because they look differently from us. Like that young fellow who went down and shot up El Paso, you know, and he was just looking for people who were of Spanish descent. And he was going to go and shoot them all because they were different. And he thought he was doing the right thing. He was clearing out. And it's incredible that we have these kinds of experiences. And they happen more and more each time. Every day you pick up the paper, every time you turn on the news, every time you get any kind of, you get communications from your friends about what is happening all over the place. We see it not only as we interact with people, but we see what we're doing to our own natural environment, the world in which we live. I saw on a newscast the other day that Montana, northern Montana, is the warmest spot on the entire planet. And they showed photographs from years ago with the snow all over the mountains. And they showed them today. And it's practically all disappeared. We just continue to do those kinds of things. We see it as we clear out forests, you know, that provide the oxygen that we breathe without taking into account, you know, the side effects of all of those things. And we do it why? We do it often because of the bottom line of money or the bottom line of power. And politicians in league with all kinds of entities like that are just destroying that planet. I saw also, you know, that we are fast approaching that tipping point in what the planet can actually handle in terms of population. If memory serves me correctly, it was something like 7.6 billion. Well, we're not too far from that right now. And if we don't wake up, we're in deep trouble. And we know all these things. And so when we hear things in the church, you know, that God is love and we want to express love and all these kind of things, why should I? Because all the people who are supposedly expressing those things are right in the mix of all these things as well. Where are we in this process? Where are we in the solution to these problems? And we say to ourselves, and I know I say to myself, well, you know, what can you do? Everyone can do something, even if it's a very minor kind of thing to do. Everyone can
reach out to someone who's in need. Everyone can let a smile fall on their face as they see people. Everyone can challenge their representatives, whoever they are. And it doesn't matter whether you're independent, Republican, or Democrat, or whatever brand you are. They all are doing the same thing. They just dress it up a little bit differently. When have you heard a substantive comment from any one of them on any one issue? Lots of TV time, lots of sprucing up, and well, I can't talk about that, you know, and so on and so forth. There are problems. But faith is something given to us by Jesus, by God through Jesus of Nazareth. In Paul's letter to the Corinthians, we have that famous phrase, God was in Christ, reconciling the world to God's self. That love of God comes down and shines forth in this almost or perfect illustration of what it means to be human in Jesus of Nazareth. And it sounds wonderful. One other time I gave a sermon, you know, pushing the walls back on a communion. And in that sermon there, Jesus is talking to the disciples, and he says to them, this is my own invention on top of that. He pushed the walls back, and he says to Peter, well, Peter, you say you're going to do all this for me. Well, let me push it back and see what's going to happen to you and see where you are there. And he says, you're going to deny me three times. You're going to do this. And Peter says, oh, no, I won't do that. I will stand up with you. And, of course, at the first challenge, he caves. At the first point of contact with opposition, he caves, as do all the other disciples. But then, later on, they are awakened and given new life in terms of the resurrection experiences that they have. That this love is even going to be more powerful than all those things that came in. So we wrestle between this idea of faith and belief. Belief, for me, is simply what you live by, what you understand to be the most important principles of living in engaging with other human beings. This requires a whole lot of changes for us. It requires us to sit down, as the one of the thoughts for the day said, sit down and have a chat with those who have disagreements with us. It's easy to talk with your friends because they're going to be like echoes back and forth. But talk to someone who has an entirely different perspective. I've told you a number of times that when I was in the academy, when I was teaching at the university, I used to go to atheistic philosophy meetings rather than the Christian philosophy meetings. Because the Christian philosophy meetings, while they were good, and there was lots of good academic historical scholarship there that was useful, but if you go and talk to people who have a whole different philosophy of life, and they are committed to it just as you are committed to the Christian faith, there's a whole different dynamic there. Because you are talking about fundamental first principles. And one of the things I discovered in doing all that is that the ethics and morality that we derive out of these encounters is often very much the same. If you talk to a humanist society, for example, they are trying to develop a world in which, you know, people can lift up human values of respecting other people, regardless of their race and so forth, regardless of their nationality, regardless of their level in society, and reach out to lift them up. And what do you know? Isn't that exactly what the Christian faith is talking about? We just have two different a priori starting point. They have an abstract idea of what it means to be human. My fundamental question to them was always, well, where do you get that from? You certainly can't see it in humanity because it's not there very well or very often. At least in Christianity, we have a model. And even if we created the model, we have a model for what it means to be human. And so we wrestle back and forth. So faith is not without doubt ever. Faith always challenges us to look at how we apply that in the world today. When we go back to the early days, for example, when Paul went out to the Romans and the Greeks, and he preached the gospel there. He did not restate the Hebrew message, even though it was connected to the Christian message. But he spoke to them on their terms. He went up that hill, at Mars Hill, and he said, I see in all things that you are really religious. And you know, I've already told you, I'm not very religious. But religious is where you have all these idols going up there. And that was criticized in our passage today too. But let me tell you, you are really very clever because you have one altar that doesn't have anything on it. And it says, for the unknown God. And I'm going to tell you about that unknown God who's going to wipe away all these others. And Paul then encountered them. Now, they didn't all fall down and say, oh, yes, Paul, you're right. No, they said, very interesting, but we will see about this. Come back tomorrow morning, as most philosophers would do. But some came back, and some came back. So faith always has to challenge all those things that want to shut it off. Because that principle of love incarnate is an absolutely magnificent principle. I really have great difficulty understanding why people would see that they could not adhere to it. They may not be able to adhere to it, but it is a principle that everyone, I believe, should want to embrace with their whole heart and spirit as it goes on and on. Often what stops us from doing that is always that intellectual pride. Well, I don't really need God. I don't really need anything else. I can do it all by myself. I've had a lot of experience with that. When we were first married, Carolyn and I, we did a lot of traveling, and we traveled, and we would be driving all over the place, and I would never stop and ask directions. Never. Never. One day, we were up in the Catskill Mountains and the Adirondack Mountains, and we drove for 8 hours to get to where we're going before we got there. Well, I soon learned that this was not a smart thing to do. It wasn't. I didn't learn it too fast, actually. Every once in a while, we still have a fallback. You know how that goes. But it's a matter of intellectual pride. I can get there. I know this. And as soon as somebody says to me, I know this, my next question is, how do you know this? Yeah? What evidence do you have for this? And we need to be more open to the sciences. Geomorphologist friend of, he's sort of a friend of mine at the University of Washington who has written those two books. One's called Dirt, and one is called The Rocks Don't Lie. But he has a powerful argument that says religious understandings or theological understandings speak to the spirit of the human person. And the sciences speak to the empirical realities. Both of these are true, because truth cannot negate one another. Truth is truth, but we speak about different dimensions of it. So maybe we ought to stop arguing with each other and start looking for commonalities. I can still remember at the Secretariat for the Christian Unity in Rome. We were there for a meeting, and we were sitting with all of these Vatican theologians. We had come down from the World Council of Churches. And there was this one priest who was there, Father Aloysius Klein, and he had the Lutheran Book of Confession, the Confessio Augustana. And he stood up with that in his hand, and he looks up at the ceiling. I guess he was looking to God. And he says, there isn't anything in here that the Catholic could not subscribe to. I don't understand why we are having these fights. And of course, over at the Vatican offices, they were probably having a different kind of interpretation from the Curia. But I believe he was right. And I often wonder what happened to him. Never heard from him again. But there was no reason for it. But we have to be open to these kinds of things and take that step out in faith. And faith is an ongoing, critical, dynamic force. Faith, Paul Tillich calls, is your ultimate concern. Whatever is of great significance to you, and you act on it. That is your faith. And from my point of view, there is none better than the Christian faith stance in the person of Jesus of Nazareth. But it's an ongoing process. Mine is still going on. I changed the title of one of my books 3 times, about faith. The final answer is love. The final answer is a question mark. The final answer is something else. But we have to keep looking for the final answer. And I'm always, always comforted by the fact that Albert Einstein, who has some wonderful quotes, I love this one. He said, it's not that I'm so much smarter than anybody else. He said, I just keep working at it. And of course, his most famous one, I guess, is imagination is much more important than knowledge. Because imagination catapults us out to explore these things. And I keep saying to myself, well, Albert, why can't you see that that's what Jesus of Nazareth is doing? And he does, but he just will not buy in to the superstructure. So it's an ongoing process and an exciting process if you take it seriously. And that's what the church is all about. And so that is what I will leave you with this day. Faith and belief. Struggle with it. Find out where you are. Don't be fearful of stepping out, raising questions. I know we sing lots of hymns and so forth, but I often wonder if I stopped and asked right after the hymn, what did you sing? What would be the answer? I'm afraid to try that. Because I have the same problem myself sometimes. So pray with me. Gracious and loving God, let us understand that